Robert, you didn't tell everybody your name. This is Robert. Thank you for the introduction. Today, and this is not for you guys to feel sad, my husband, I've been battling something. He's in ICU, and he told me to go ahead and do this presentation. I'm not going to get upset. You're not going to get upset either, because we're going to do this thing. But I want for you to take a picture with me, with the group, if you don't mind. And I'm going to give you mine, and I'm going to send it to him. I got you on that, if that's what you need to do. Okay, just a click, and I'm just going to stand. Yep, I'm just going to be right here.
Well, you guys are really pretty here.
Thank you so much, I appreciate it. So, guys, good morning. Thank you very much for coming, and thank you very much for letting me share some information with you about something that I think is coming. Do you need me to move my stuff out the way? Here, no. Come on. Yeah, absolutely. How about that? I can put it there? Fantastic. That's my jacket, so you're good, Rosalie. I know her. Anyway, we're going to talk about short sales today. So he gave me an introduction, but I'm going to give you some background because I think it's important for you guys to know where I hail from. So over 30 years in mortgage servicing experience, 17, 18 of those were at U.S. Bank. Worked at Citibank for about 6 years, SharePoint Mortgage Servicing, Fifth Third Bank. So mostly the big service centers and the big national banks. I worked in default mortgage servicing that consists of collection, foreclosure, loss mitigation, bankruptcy, REO, recovery, and you name it, I've done it. I've sat in a chair, I've been a processor, and I've been a manager of managers. So that's my professional background. My ADD real estate background, as Vina would call it, is, let's see, fix and flips, buy and holds, of course, short sales. I've done commercial, I do commercial, a residential group home. I've been all over the place because I was one of those people that couldn't decide what I liked, and I just kind of tried it all until I landed somewhere, and I've landed everywhere. So I got a little bit of experience over a mass amount of things. So that's my background. Today we're going to talk about short sales. I'm going to talk about it from a banker's perspective, but I expect for you guys to engage with me so that you can ask from your perspective, right? And we're going to assume that you guys, some things here, that you guys know what a short sale is. So I think he said his name was Richard, right? He stole my thunder just a little bit. I was going to ask how many of you guys knew what a short sale was. Don't answer that question. So I'm going to ask another one. How many have actually successfully purchased a short sale? Okay, show of hands. Okay. Okay, so less than a fourth of the room, actually. And I think it's because of a misnomer about some things of short sales, right? So we know what short sales are. It's anything that's less than, you pay for it, that's less than the value or the asset or what's owed on the asset, right? It is a loss mitigation, cold market strategy. It needs to be at an arm's length transaction. And we know the CFPB came in after the great R and put in some regulatory requirements about it. And I see people taking pictures. Feel free to take pictures. And at the end of each slide, you guys can also ask questions, and we'll approach it that way. And then again at the end, I'll save some time. And I believe they're going to send the PowerPoint out. And if they don't, this is a commercial break. You can get in touch with me, and I'll send you anything that you would like to have about the presentation. Okay? Possible deficiency judgment. The bad ding for the seller is it will ding your credit score. 75 points at a minimum. I've seen it go up to 250 points, and it lasts about 7 years. Another class, but there's a way to get that off your credit bureau, but it does happen. So that is something that you would need to know when you approach a seller of a property to talk them through some of the possibilities and things that will happen to them, right? And then now there's no 1099-C or tax implication. However, at one point there was. So if you had a $100,000 shortfall, the bank would actually send you a 1099-C for which the IRS would have counted that as income. That has been forgiven, so the seller no longer has to worry about the tax implications or consequences. Also, a good thing to know. Yes, sir.
So they can't do that anymore?
That's been removed.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a windfall for us, right, as real estate entrepreneurs and investors, because that's one of the great selling points. People are always concerned about what's going to happen when they, forgive me, of the shortfall, right? Well, no longer can they send you a 1099. See, they send it, but it will actually, there's a box that actually marks forgiven, and so it will be, it's forgiven. So that's one of the new things, unless our current administration decides to change some of that stuff, right? And we know that short sales can take a very, very long time. If anybody's ever negotiated them, they take a long time. Well, who asked that question? Yeah, well, let's talk about that, right? So, our short sales are things of the past. We talked a little bit about the Great Recession, the Great R, right? In 2008, Zillow says 1 in 10 houses actually change hands. What does that mean? That means that you had a house, you bought her house, you decided that you didn't want that house, you sold it, you bought that house. It continued to cycle and change hands. And the reason for that, from a banking perspective, is because people were strategic defaulters. Do you know what a strategic defaulter is? Yeah, right. So it's real easy. I have a $300,000 house. It goes upside down. It's only worth $120,000. Mr. Jones has a $500,000 house. I decide to walk away because my mortgage is current. I go buy the $500,000 house now for $250,000 because it's underwater and the banks were allowing all these short wins and shortfalls. Now I have this big house for less of the value. That was the big thing in 2007, 8, 9, and 10. And then, of course, there was the Debt Relief Act that came in, which we talked about on the previous slide, that allowed for people to do this because there was no tax implication. And so it was a very interesting time, very busy. Making home affordable came during that time. People were getting all kinds of forbearances. People were getting all kinds of write-offs, relocation assistance, cash for keys, you name it. It was going on during that span of years. Fast forward to today. We have the CARES Act. Oh, the CARES Act. That's a whole class in itself. Delinquencies. Delinquencies are down 6.44%. What does that mean? That means that there's a standstill right now in the mortgage industry because of the foreclosure moratorium, because of the eviction proceedings. And, oh, in the CARES Act, there was something about credit bureau freezes. I don't know if you guys ever read part of the CARES Act, and just like the bullet points, where they did a freeze on credit bureaus, so they weren't actually reporting people that were delinquent, that was normally delinquent. So it artificially inflated the delinquency, or deflated the delinquencies, 6.44. But wait, 3 million loans are actually past due. And this is information from Black Knight. I don't know if you know Black Knight Servicing. They have one of the biggest platforms for mortgage servicing centers. But this is according to Black Knight in a recent article that I read. 90% of people, they haven't paid their student loans. Oh boy, what does that mean? They're in deferment. Those loans are going to come through eventually. The lowest bankruptcy filing since 85. What does that mean? We'll talk about that on another page. Many of the 5-1 ARMs are coming due. The utility forbearance is ending. Did you guys know about that? The one with the water where they couldn't turn the water off? It doesn't have anything to do with the cold. We're going to come into the cold season where they don't turn off your water and some stuff like that. But there's been a utility forbearance where people have amassed this big water bill and these big electric bills. Okay, shameless plug. If you guys have tenants out there or residents, I should say, that are struggling, I know that there's assistance out there here in Cincinnati, and I know you guys are from many places. They have the 513 relief and the CAA relief. That program is actually up. It is working. We've got some great plugs out on our Facebook site. Our communications person, Deb, is here. She did a great article about that. Help your tenants get some relief for that, because this is ending. And what's going to happen if we don't win this water legal problem is the water bill. You guys as owners are going to be stuck with it. So you want to really work on that hard and get them some of the relief if they're in your house and they're paying the water. Special forbearance from the CARES Act was over in October. That's a big deal, because during that time, no payments were reduced at all. People were just on forbearance. It didn't go to the end of a loan like with making home affordable. They just put them on forbearance, and now those payments are going to come due, their regular mortgage payments, with money on top of it. So it wasn't put to the end of the loan in most cases. Some of them probably could have qualified for a different forbearance, but the majority of the people did not. It was a special forbearance under the CARES Act. 3.48, a decrease in forbearance, and they're exiting with no loss mitigation strategy. You guys know what loss mitigation is, right? No? So loss mitigation is one of those default servicing strategies, and it consists of a way to help the person out. It's either you catch up the payments by programs, repayments, forbearance, deferments, or you help them with an exit strategy, which could mean a deed in lieu of foreclosure, cash for keys. And I'm throwing out some terms. If you guys don't know what they are, please ask, and we'll talk about that during this conference as well. And there's a housing shortage. All of that came from CARES Act. The housing shortage, what did they do? People weren't getting evicted. They weren't getting foreclosed. So the normal people, the normal cycle of events stopped happening. And then, they couldn't build new houses because I think the cost of lumber and the cost of supplies were... Right, so you have this artificial housing thing going on because of the CARES Act, and what's going to happen coming out of the other side of it is what I think is, it's a super seller's market, but I think they're going to no longer be called short sales, but I think they're going to be called full sales, and I'm going to tell you why. Questions on this slide? Yes, sir.
All these things add up to the mass seller market, because it seems like things are crashing kind of work down. So that says to me it doesn't sound like a super seller market, it sounds like a super buyer.
Well, so what this gentleman is saying is that because these things are eventually going to crash, it sounds like a super buyer's market. Right now, it is a super seller's market, and I'm willing to bet because the rates, the Fed is not going to reduce the rates, and because there's still a housing shortage, because you still have to go through foreclosure, because there still has to be evictions and they're not caught up with those, it's going to be a seller's market for a little while. And I don't think that we're going to see a buyer's market turn in 2022. Not at all. It takes too long for the process to catch up. We've been in this pandemic for 2 years. It's all of last year. This year is almost over. You can't clear that back up in a year. So we're going to be in a seller's market for a while if I had to bet on it, and I'm not a betting girl. Kevin?
Yeah, just curious, if that's the case, full sales being the term, mm-hmm. Does that mean there'll be more deed in lieu of, more acceptance of that?
And that's one of the things that we're going to talk about. I definitely think that that's going to be one of the strategies because of the full sales that we're going to need to look at in order for it to be a short sale. We can talk about that one. Remind me, I think it's like on page 3. If I don't, I'll bring up your question and we can talk about that on the next slide. Somebody else had a hand. Yes, ma'am?
Neighborhoods, homes usually go for $65,000, mm-hmm. Now they go up for $225,000. Mm-hmm. In a very low producing neighborhood, is that what you mean by full sale?
No. So it's a good question. She's asked, what the lady up here is saying is that she's seen houses that are $65,000. That's what the ARV is, go for $100,000, $200,000. Is that what I mean by full sale? No, it's not. What I mean by full sale is a short sale is less than the amount owed on the asset. A full sale is the total amount owed on the asset. That's what I mean by full sale from a banking perspective. We're not talking about the value of the house. I'm talking about the payoff of the house. So very good question. Thank you for asking that. Yes, ma'am.
I'm finding out that we have a record number that's selling rental property by the government from
mm-hmm.
that are getting out of the
Right. Right. And so what, I don't know if you guys could hear what she was saying. She was talking, she was actually commenting on the seller's market. I am not a realtor by trade because I'm a banker. And that's a conflict of interest. However, there are some realtors in the room, and I was actually speaking with one of my realtor friends, and what she told me is that she had a client that sold his house in Oakley, and I think the house was $300,000 or something like that, and he bought it for, so he made a profit of several hundred thousand, and now he's an apartment dweller, like a one-bedroom studio, until he can find a house, but the delta on his profit was so magnificent that he decided to go ahead and do it, and you're going to see a lot of that, so your point is very, very valid. Any more questions that slide? Yes, sir.
So we're going to see a lot of that. We're going to see, as landlords, we may see more homeowner quality tenant applicants.
Absolutely. That's a good question. A little apart from a short sale, but very valid in speaking about this. And it goes to what Kevin was talking about earlier with the subject too. I believe that you absolutely will see that. And that's going to be better for us as resident housing providers, right? Because the quality of the tenant is going to differ. And I'm sure that Jeffrey, Mr. Landlord, is coming, and he probably is going to speak to some of that type of stuff with the paperwork and systems to get. So you guys might want to catch that if you're residential housing providers. No questions? Next slide. Okay. So right here what we have is just a recent excerpt from Freddie Mac. So you know there's Fannie, Freddie, FHD, FDA, FHA, everybody, all those acronyms from the government. These are the big players when it comes to mortgage-backed financing. Well, been looking through a thing, recent article, they just put up this year, short sale eligibility requirements and servicer authority. So if you don't think the short sales are coming, do you think they would already be publishing this information? Absolutely. It's talking about it. This was 321, and it says the servicer must see the borrower's delinquency status to determine eligibility. I put this up here for a reason. One, to validate the fact that short sales are coming and people are getting ready for it. And two, if you haven't researched the type of mortgage that you want to do a short sale with, then you, all of the government entities have searchable evidence, and it tells you what the short sale requirements are. It's going to go through it number by number, page by page, eligibility requirements for short sale. This is Googleable. You can take a picture, but all you need to do is go to Freddie, Fannie, FHA, FDA. Now, some of the servicers won't tell you that, and we're going to talk about a way to get in front of them later. But any of the government entities, this stuff is on their website. It's free, it's researchable, and it's for you. And it tells you exactly what you need to do as the purchaser in order to get your seller to qualify for the short sale. I mean, it's amazing. Must be experienced or must have experience in eligible hardship listed. That goes to that hardship letter we'll talk about. Must have listed the mortgage premises. And some of them require that the property be listed for 60 days, 90 days. Some of them don't have requirements at all. Some of them don't even require for them to be listed on the MLS. They're all different. So I point this out to you to say, just do a little research and have a strategy, but we'll talk about that, about things that you need to be doing right now to get ready for 2022. Yes, sir?
I'm curious. I didn't realize, I thought specifically what I'm talking about, the VA number, that they have 88%
yep.
off the VPA or full prices. I just did one, and then came in under that 88%, and I was like shocked because I was there at like 84%.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do they have to prove that to VA?
It's a formula, and I do have a slide on that, and we're going to talk about BPO evaluations. So hold that thought, and I'm sure you'll have some more questions when we get to it, but good point. So what the gentleman is talking about is valuations, and how does the bank get to that mathematical number of acceptance? Is it because the servicer required it? Is it VA? Is it HUD? Is it whomever? And how they get to that. So I'm going to give you some insider information about it and how they evaluate it and why they have to evaluate it that way. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I think I heard you say it was up to the servicer to decide whether the realtor got listed or
not. The servicer. It's up to the whoever is the backer of the mortgage, the financial backer. So Fannie and Freddie, U.S. Bank may be the servicer, but it may be a FHA, a Fannie, a Freddie. So we would have to move in accordance with their guidelines. So it's important that when you're talking to your seller, all these things that you need to get, the hardship, all that, you need to know what type of loan that they have so that you can do some research to understand how to get through the eligibility requirements, because that's going to become important when you put your full package together to get in front of the bank. You're going to be ahead of the game because you're going to know already what they need.
Okay, my question really was about the realtor having the listing. Is that by the backer that determines what?
That's right.
So it's not a legal thing?
No, it is not. No, sir. You're going to find that some of them don't have to be listed at all. As a matter of fact, they don't want them listed because if they do sell it, they don't want to pay the commission. Some are going to want it listed because they want a broader audience to see and have an opportunity to make a bid, you know, or put in an offer on that particular property. But it is not a legal, a binding legal requirement. No, sir. Let's see. What were we talking about here? Eligibility in Freddie Mac. Not acquired a new mortgage within 6 months. That was that strategic default that we were talking about a little bit earlier that people were doing back in 2008-09. So they found a way around that. Borrower must not have entered into a program or arrangement where a third party takes title. Listen up, guys. This is us. So entered into an arrangement. Well, to me, that could be a, well, the way around it, absolutely. You couldn't have a arrangement to buy it like you would if you were wholesaling it and you put it under contract and then you wanted to wholesale the property. You're going to have a problem with a Fannie, with a Freddie Mac, not Fannie Mae, with a Freddie Mac loan. So you're going to want to look at that. There are ways around it. There are ways around the arm's length transactions with LLCs and selling it. And if you guys have questions about that, we can talk about that as well. But my point being is it's really important for you to understand what you can and cannot do based on what type of loan that it is. And then they must be 60 days delinquent in this one. There are other that they don't have to be delinquent at all. Some are 30 days. Everyone is going to vary.
I don't think so.
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why in a few minutes. Her question was, do I still think the short sales are going to take a very, very long time? I don't think so for the big players. I do think that when you start getting into your smaller servicers, your smaller credit unions, you may have problems because they might not be able to keep up with volume. And we're going to talk about volume and what sits on a processor's or loss mitigation's desk, like the number of files. So I think it's going to vary based on the type of loan and based on what servicer or bank has the actual property. Yes, sir?
Banks are going to take less loss, if I've heard you right, from some of this than they did like in 08. Then it seems like they would be more apt.
And I said full sale. I didn't say the bank was going to take less loss. That was, I'm with you, and I hear you. But I do want to make something very clear. And back on the first, when I said full sale, I'm going to tell you why I said full sale. Because I don't believe that we're in an environment where a house would cost $100,000 and a bank would take $85,000. And I'll explain why.
That would be even more so to my point.
Mm-hmm.
I was being a little bit
concerned. Okay.
They're not going to take a loss. And they're going to be, theoretically, work with you even more to make this happen.
Maybe.
It just seems like it. Maybe.
So what he said was, if the bank is not going to take a loss, it seems like they would work with you a little more. So I'm gonna take a quick pause and address that before we move on. From a banking perspective, My REO shop, real estate owned shop, we haven't been a profit center in over probably about 15 years until recently. Meaning, and I see a few realtors in the house, meaning that the offers that came in were way less. And so we still had to take that loss and that write-off whether we filed a claim to get the money back or not. But now you put a property on the market, $100,000, it's coming in $105,000, $120,000, $100,000. So really, from my perspective, I'm looking at highest and best offer. What's going to make me the most money? Because I have a fiduciary responsibility to my stakeholders and to the people, if I'm a non-servicer entity, to them to make the most money that I can. And that's what I'm going to do. So if you just send in the offer and you're the only one, and I think, even with my limited knowledge here in Cincinnati, that property in Florida is only worth X, I'm gonna reject that offer and wait for, I bet I can get, and so there's a gamble in some of that. I bet I can get more. I'm Googling something and it says, houses in this market is going for 150. I'm going to reject your offer. I don't really have incentive to work with you from a banking perspective. So that's why from a buyer's perspective, from the seller that you meet and make a friend with, your package is going to have to be solid. And we're going to talk about things that you need to do to make sure that you have a solid package later on in the slide. I thought I saw another hand. Yes, ma'am.
Your package, you want to basically submit a reason.
Sign for
it's value and nonsense.
That's part of the BPO valuation. It absolutely is. So the question was, you want to submit a reason why the value of the property is what it is. And you're absolutely right. And we can go into more detail on that when we talk about how to submit and put that package offer together. Yes, sir?
Yeah, I was going to ask. What I think I'm hearing you say is that as a banker, you're looking for best offer,
mm-hmm.
regardless of what the face value of the mortgage.
That's right.
The face value is $100,000. Somebody gives you $120,000, that's going to go all day long.
That's right. Absolutely. Like I said, he what he said is, as a banker, I'm looking for the best value. That's right. It's a numbers game with the bank, too. So you know that if a bank has to take a loss on a property, they have to put the difference of that delta in a reserve. So that actually hinders. It's a credit loss. So that hinders the amount of money that the bank can actually lend out, because the cushion for that has to be in reserves. So for me, in order for me to make my department profitable, I'm looking for high and best so that my charge-off is way less than what I actually forecast that particular month. I may have forecasted $4 million based on my inventory. Well, if I come in at 2.5, not only is it a win for me on my appraisal review, but it's a win for the company, the bank, the stockholders, the shareholders, and everybody else. So I'm looking at it from a financial perspective. Oh boy, that got a lot of questions. For the person in the back.
So the bank was in the bank, and so the money way more than the face value. So what the bank was in.
So you might have missed it. So let's talk about that again. So when we talk historically about a short sale, the short sale is less than the amount owed on the asset. What I am saying is short sales, because they haven't coined a new terminology for it yet, is going to be a thing in 2022, but it's not going to be a short sale. I'm calling them full sales. That's my terminology. I don't know what they're going to call them. I think it's still going to be short sales, because the banking industry is a dinosaur when it comes to naming stuff. So they're probably still going to call it short sales. And it will catch up with the nomenclature like in 10 years when it's not a thing anymore. Answer your question? Okay. Yes, sir.
If a new person purchasing a property, you see high offers and still not have to agree with whatever lenders are using to get the loan.
Depends on the financing. Yes, sir?
So as investors, we want to get a hold of it before it's fully activated. We want to come under contract.
That's right.
Update and do something.
Maybe.
Two options.
Yes.
Some kind of other wraparound or something.
Yes.
So that we can keep keep our price down.
That's right. That's right. So he's actually formulated his strategy. That's exactly what you just did. I don't know if you want me to repeat it or not, because you have a bunch of people that basically what he said. Yeah, I know, right? Did everybody hear what he said? I'm going to hold it hostage. So, dude, no.
They're all going to figure it out.
Okay, so what he said was, as investors, we want to get a hold of it early in the game and actually do some type of creative strategy. Bill Cook and Venus speaking on that sometime today, maybe tomorrow, I don't know. Might want to get a hold of that. And put some type of creative financing option, wrap around subject to ahead of time so that we don't have to deal with these things. I said, yes, that's a strategy. And or you can just figure out what's going on with what type of loan it is and figure out how to deal with it based off of the criteria that they set forth before you. So good question. Yes, yes, wait, somebody. That's right. That's exactly what I'm saying. He said that if you don't get some type of, get in front of it early, get in early in the deal, and get some type of creative strategy going, you're going to end up paying more because of all the other competition that's going on. Unless you just get a person and you're exclusively working with them and you happen to be lucky in that space. So you're absolutely right. Somebody else? Yes, ma'am?
With regarding the extra funds that they get when it goes for more, and you said they are able to use those funds and put it in
there. Yeah. So let's talk about that. So she was talking about the extra funds when the bank or non-bank servicer gets more. When I made that reference, I was specifically talking about a REO, a real estate owned that had gone through a deed in lieu foreclosure process and was after. But the bank is not able to take more than what the full payoff is. However, the full payoff might not be the amount of the asset. It could include fees. And those fees can be exorbitant, especially if you start talking about forced place insurance in like Florida or someplace like that. The homeowner's delinquent, they're not paying. We have to protect our asset. You put, forget the taxes, right? Well, in some places, don't forget them because it's pretty expensive taxes in Florida too. But you put that forced place insurance on it, where your normal insurance may have cost you $1,100, triple that. And then times that by however long it took for you to get through the foreclosure. Well, in Georgia, Texas, very fast. In New York, 3 to 5 years. Those are fees. And you have to add on the attorney's fees, and you have to add on the maintenance fees, and you have to add on. So they can actually settle their full loan and receive a full payoff. So, yes, it may be more than the payoff on the house, but it may not be, but it's the fees that actually rack up the charges. And we're going to talk about getting a payoff and how to negotiate those fees.
But if there is additional funds, they're allowed to keep those additional funds.
There shouldn't be additional funds. They're not going to make a deal over an actual full payoff of the loan. That happens in recovery and REO, but in the front part of it, where you want to get in, that does not. It's the actual full payoff, including what's owed on the asset. Make sense? Okay. Can we move on? I don't have my watch. Like, so what time is it? Oh, my. Okay. We still don't think that short sales are going to be a thing, or full sales, or whatever we're going to call it. Take a look here. This new thing is called Reimagine, and it's also by Freddie Mac. But Reimagine is a new platform that they are helping setting up to expedite foreclosures. Look at that line. Currently allows for short sale approval and settlement submissions. They are working on deed in lieu. See, it says deed in lieu will be available over, wrong button, available, second line, over time. So, again, to my point, if you didn't think there were going to be short sales in 2022, these big people wouldn't be gearing up for it, and they're figuring out a way to submit the package and how to get it expedited. Usually Freddie comes out and everybody else follows suit. So they're the trailblazers here, and then people get on board with what they're doing. Oh, that's a great thing. Let's get on board. They're figuring out a way for you to expedite the actual process of getting the short sale approved, reviewed, and approved. MBA, Mortgage Bankers Association, another July 26th, share of mortgage loans in forbearance slightly decreased. Remember earlier we talked about the special forbearance being over in October, and we talked about delinquency still being up, but there were still 3 million loans that were past due. This is just more evidence of that from another source. So that you guys didn't think I was thinking and just making this stuff up. All right, let's talk about this. We talked, this gentleman, a couple of guys over here were talking about how to get in early, the creative strategies over here. A couple of people over here were talking about where to find them. Look, guys, we're all real estate entrepreneurs and investors of some sort. These things are ways that you can get in front of other people and find short sales. Now I'm going to take my mortgage banker hat off and I'm going to put on my real estate investor's hat. And this is what I would be doing if I were looking for short sales. Not my thing because I work with them every day, but you guys are here, so it's your thing. So let's talk about them. You know those wonderful bandit signs that Michelle and her group use for wholesaling? They work on this too. Have you ever thought about vacant yards? I know Felicia's going to kill me. Yes, vacant lots. I would put my Ray of Hope Realty sign in a vacant house that didn't have a realtor sign. It's vacant. Okay, so they may take it down. They take down your bandit signs too. Well, okay. So why wouldn't you put your sign there? I buy houses, or I buy short sales, or call me at another marketing strategy. It's what I would do. If they take it down, okay, they take it down. If they call you, change your number. I don't know. But it's something that I would do. Pawn shop windows. People that go to pawn shops are typically looking for what? Money. Okay. So they may have a house or something, right? So if you're talking to the make friends, and I think Pete is in the room, and he's doing a seminar on Sunday, I believe, of how to influence friends and win allies, if maybe one of the allies should be the pawn shop. Can you put your sign there? I bet you they'll let you do it for free. They don't care. They're just getting people to come in. But if your thing is sitting right there, and that's the first thing they see, maybe you'll get a hit off of it. Courthouse pre-foreclosure delinquents. Okay, taking off my real estate investor hat, putting back on my mortgage hat. Let's talk about pre-foreclosures for a minute. I have heard over and over and over pre-foreclosures be synonymous with short sales. Listen, guys, a pre-foreclosure is a short sale, but it's only one aspect. Do not limit yourself to thinking that's the only way you can get in this game, because it's not. So when you think of short sale, full sales, think of them broadly and not only in a pre-foreclosure, because some people are not going to even be delinquent when you get in front of them and meet them, and they're never going to even hit the pre-foreclosure status. So I need for you guys to expand your thinking about what the opportunity could be to seize a short sale. But pre-foreclosures still work. Divorce filings, that's public record. Maybe they have a house. You find out that they have a divorce, you look at the public records, you go to the tax assessors, they have a house. What's going to happen with the divorce? Maybe that's where you send your postcard. Maybe that's where you door knock, Bill Cook. I only door knock for collections, so I've never tried it for anything else, and most of the times people slam the door in my face, so that's not something I would do. Code violations. How many of you have been downtown on the second Tuesday of the month to the code violation meeting? Anybody ever gone to a code violation meeting? Two people. So what happens, and you have to check your local listing because COVID is weird. Most places have opened back up, but maybe some have not. They actually have a meeting that's open to the public, and they actually list every code violation, what the code violation is, how long that the code violation has been open, and the people that have the code violation have to come. So not only do you know the house and what's going on with it, you get to meet the person. You're sitting right there. It's a, and maybe it's a person that's an absentee landlord that they have a representative that's there, and they've been dealing with, dude, you need windows, and they haven't done windows, and they keep getting stays and stays. Maybe that's an opportunity for you to talk to this guy and maybe get a wholesale, but maybe you could get a short sale too. I actually happen to attend those meetings. It's very valuable information, a good way to find contractors because sometimes they come too, but it's a good way to get in front of it. These people aren't typically in foreclosure. They would never hit the paper. You might not ever meet them other except for the fact that the city rolled past their house and they knew that it was non-owner occupied, and they decided to cite them for the boarder was crooked or the nails were wrong or they thought one of the windows were open when they weren't. Code violations are magnificent. Check it out. It's free. All you have to do is go and get the information. Probate court, it's kind of sad, but it works. Sometimes there's property that are to heirs, and heirs are out of town, and they really don't want to deal with that. It's a possibility that you might be able to speak with them and get some type of creative solution going on with them and take over ownership of the house that way. That could end up being a short sale as well. Off-market deals, of course, we know what those are. Non-bank servicers, small banks, and credit unions. So I mentioned this earlier. Credit unions, they do give housing loans. But typically they don't have collection shops. And a lot of them don't even know what to do with it. They don't have a big attorney wheelhouses on glass where they can just send a letter. They don't have any of that stuff. Some of those people are your friends. You need to start looking at what portfolio they have and whether or not you want to do business with them. Small banks, Union Saving, Third Federal, that's what I would consider smaller size. They may be prominent in the community, but they're typically your local banks, and they're usually not top 10. Those banks also have a nice portfolio. They're usually backed by the larger banks, so some of their qualifications for their short sale deals may be a little different, and it might take you a little while to get through them, but it's a place that's usually not tapped. And then, of course, your non-servicers. Most people talk about Fannie, Freddie, U.S. Bank, Fifth Third, Wells, Bank of America, but you're not talking about these Freedom, Mr. Cooper, Loan Care, Shell Point. Have any of you ever had dealings with any of those before? I see a couple hands. Very, very good. Well, typically non-bank servicers, they also are servicing for not just in the just bigger banks and runoff, but for individuals. So say I have 10 properties and I don't want to go to Michelle's property management service, right? And I decide to list with Shell Point Mortgage Servicing. And they actually service loans for me. You would never know that unless you ask, you look on the public records. You would see Shell Point in the foreclosure because they're the representative, but my name would not appear unless you looked on public record. So Tiffany Ray owns the property. Shell Point Loan Care, Mr. Cooper Freedom Mortgage is my servicer. I'm the person who makes the decision on the short sale, not the bank. Yes, ma'am.
Are servicers allowed to
They file it in accordance with my guidelines. So I have a SLA, a statement of work that I put out. At 90 days or 120 days, I want you to send the pre-foreclosure letter. At 180 days, I want you to file the foreclosure. I authorize this amount of money for a write-down on this property. If it files bankruptcy, I want you to follow these programs. I, as the owner of the property, set forth the rules for what the servicer does. So they file it on behalf of me or whoever owns the particular property. This is a little known fact. Most people just see the names and they just assume that Shell Point Mortgage got funding from New Residential Financial and they're the owners. But a lot of times under the surface, they are not the owners. So while you're busy talking to Shell Point and Loan Care and Mr. Cooper, if it were me and I were looking for short sales, I would be talking to the person who owned the loan. Whether that was a third part, an individual like me, or a company. A lot of times you'll see the LLC that will own those properties. Get in touch with those people and find out what their strategy is for disposition. It's nothing but a phone call.
Yeah, I was curious about that because
because you have a subject too that is being serviced. It used to be at the State Farm. Mortgage, and now it's serviced, but there's not very much information.
Won't be.
The owner, the State Farm isn't doing that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that, those questions of how to reach them and whatever.
Mortgage. The note and the mortgage, you get, especially if there's a filing, you get a copy of the note and the mortgage, and it'll show you who the original person is. And if it doesn't, then there's usually an affidavit. If it changes servicers, they have to do a goodbye letter and a hello letter, and they have to actually, they usually publish who the owner of record is. So it's just a little paperwork that you would be looking for. And then, of course, there's bankruptcies. This I'm going to spend a little bit of time on because I think it's a very interesting strategy of how to find foreclosures, short sales. So typically in it, you think bankruptcy, oh my God, hands off, it's a federally funded thing and you can't talk to, absolutely not. So never mind the Chapter 13s where they're restructuring and repaying, because that's a class by itself. Let's just stick to the basic facts. I have too much debt. I filed a Chapter 7. I went through the classes. I got approved, right? There's no assets, and so I don't have any assets. I only have my home. So the bankruptcy trustees have decided there's no assets, because when there are assets, they do this. They go down this whole other path that if you're not familiar with bankruptcy, you wouldn't want to tackle. No asset case, Chapter 7. Most people think all is lost. It really is not. Because we're in a seller's market, the trustee is looking at the house. Can I dispose of the house and pay off the bankruptcy plan? So even though they said, ma'am, sir, you're eligible for forgiveness under this bankruptcy strategy, they still have a responsibility to all these other people that you're filing bankruptcy on outside of the mortgage company. My house is worth $200,000. I have $30,000 in debt of credit cards, whatever, whatever, and I have $100,000 owed on my mortgage. $125,000, $130,000 max, house worth $200,000, right? The bankruptcy trustee can sell that house. They can actually pay off the entire bankruptcy, even though I personally don't have assets, if you're following me, and Citibank gets paid, Bank of America credit card gets paid, everybody, your car people, they get paid, everybody gets paid, and the bankruptcy gets a fee. They are allowed to make money. Most people don't even want to tackle a bankruptcy 7. Why wouldn't you? The most people that file bankruptcies don't do it pro se. They do it by an attorney. How about you give them a call? They have some incentive. The trustee, how about you put your package together and send your offer to the trustee? They definitely might be excited about getting an offer because they actually can make their administrative fee and they could pay off the no asset case. Guess what, guys? They publish 341 hearings all the time. You're allowed to go down there, and not only can you look at them, you can go sit. It's down on 4th Street. Have you ever been? Go down there and listen to one. Find out what the proceedings are about. Hear what they hear. You're going to hear everything about that person during that 341 meeting. And it's just like people's court. It's the same thing, except for the person is spilling their guts, everything except for their Social Security number, and you know where all their assets are, and bankruptcies are published. So you get to earmark those, and you can go in for those. That one right there is a real sweet spot. That's the yum-yum right there for me. Questions?
Yeah. So I'm an opportunity here. So I was going to actually buy somebody's house from the person in bankruptcy and have to get approved.
That's right. That's right.
So I wasn't sure exactly what I need to do to get approved by the trustee, except for know that I can't offer much more than what it's worth. So yeah, I see your face. So look, I remember I could do this like now.
Yeah.
Almost, I have a financing to basically purchase that and then refinance. And then we were going to, actually the seller was going to have actually use the funds from the sale to pay off the other debts and get out of it.
Well, the trustee owns. So what happens, it's just like Uncle Sam. When you join the military, you become the property of Uncle Sam. When you file a bankruptcy, your assets become the property of the United States Bankruptcy Court. So if you're in the bankruptcy already and you came in after the fact to make an arrangement with the seller or the person filing bankruptcy and you didn't go through the attorney or you didn't go through the trustee as an arm's length transaction, then it's going to be a little bit more difficult for you to do that. You want to get in front of the bankruptcy, resolve that, and it needs to be a good 6 months before they file that bankruptcy, unless they're filing a Chapter 13. Yes, ma'am, because what can happen, I understand that. What I'm telling you is your strategy of dealing with the seller individually, you need it to be before the bankruptcy because it's harder after.
Which we already also know we have to get permission from.
That's right.
Whatever we do.
That's right.
I was just, you can't just, throw off. So I'm assuming that they don't want a high offer, purchase and sale agreement. Do they?
Of course they do. That's what I was just saying. Oh, they absolutely do. Because they want to play off that plan. They want to pay off the bankruptcy plan, everybody that's owed, and they want to make their fee. And if there is money in a bankruptcy, this is going down the rabbit hole, but if there's money left over in a bankruptcy, they can convert it from a non-asset case in a 7 to an asset case, and then the customer might be eligible for funds. But that's a whole other story. I can talk to you offline about that.
Yeah, well, I think I do know
that this is
happening.
Now? Yeah, we can talk. I'm happy to share. More questions on this slide.
By the way, you're doing a great job, and it's your information.
Thank you. Aww.
Thank you.
Thank you. So what's next? Home, research the home, negotiate with seller, make offer, close. That simple, right? Yeah, maybe. Maybe not. I just put that in there for humor. Because that's the steps, right? That sounds more simple when it's up there on the slide, doesn't it? Getting your packet ready. We talked about this. So from the seller, you want an executed power of attorney. Please get an executed power of attorney. You want their account number, their sign-on, or a delegation account. Listen, if their taxes change, if their escrow change, if anything's changed and you don't know and you are doing the subject to and you're making that payment, guess what, guys? You're delinquent because you don't know. You have to have a way to see. Get this information. Either they give you their password or they set you up a default count. Yes, ma'am.
Is it okay just to get their authorization? I have an authorization form to give me information. Is that okay?
Same thing. I'm calling it a POA. You call it authorization. Everybody, those forms are generic. Some banks, they want their form. You can Google them and pretty much get everything. So she's asking difference between power of attorney or authorization. I like POAs. You don't have to. It's just an authorization for information. You need something from the seller that says you have the right to talk to the mortgage company. Yes, ma'am?
One of the things I ran into is I had a power of attorney versus a durable power of
attorney. One thing
to do is convert. But they would not accept power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted durable.
And
the difference was,
it's not.
But that's
where. So what she's saying up here is, different banks require different things. She had a limited power of attorney, but they wanted a durable power of attorney. Maybe a seller might give you a durable power of attorney. I don't know that I personally would do that. The authorization is good for that because you're going to get limited information to speak to them on the customer's behalf. However, the limited power of attorney could have been a limited financial power of attorney. And I'm not an attorney, but I see these documents all the time, and we check the box on the checklist what's acceptable and what is not. When you have a limited financial power of attorney, it's specific to this property only. Right, so you couldn't go out and open credit cards and do all this stuff in these people's name, but you are able to speak about the finances of this particular property. Just throwing it out there, you can get attorney advice and they can tell you the best way to get through the power of attorneys, but typically the limited financial works and just the authorization to speak on behalf of the customer for that property typically works. Yes, ma'am, in the back? Speak louder, Cheryl. Hold on. Collections for? Oh, yeah, no, I was talking about, I was making a reference to Bill Cook knocking on doors and doing creative deals. I was saying the only reason that I've ever knocked on doors was in my collection life, like asking people for money. Your past due is month in, I need my money, where's my check? I was talking about how I knocked on door to how I learned knocking on door to doors. Yes, ma'am. So, executed power of attorney, limited financial, account sign-in, sign-on, or your delegation of yourself, signed hardship letter. We read earlier in the Freddie Mac that they want that hardship letter. You can help them craft that letter. It's a whole bunch of sad sob stories, but just make sure that you know what the requirements are and that they hit all of them. A quick claim deed is good or not. You can ask for it. A lot of people do. Maybe you have it and don't file it because of that third party arm's length transaction, but it is one of the things that some people ask for. Your agreement to lock up the property, I think the gentleman spoke earlier about that creative strategy, and the payoff. The payoff is a big one. We talked earlier about that. We talked earlier about you not knowing what the valuation is versus what they actually owe. So you're thinking about the property in its totality. The bank is thinking about my payoff, including my fees, all of them. So you need that information. The customer needs or seller needs to help you get the payoff of the loan. That's very important. If they don't, then you need that financial information so that you can get the payoff. And you want to order it. You don't want to ask them how much do they owe on the loan. You want an actual quoted payoff. It doesn't cost them any money. They run to push the button, and then they can give you a payoff, and you can see the actual itemization of everything that's owed. You want the itemization because that's going to be your bargaining power in your offer. The bank has already expended the money for everything that's on there, whether it's the loan, whether it's the insurance, whether it's the taxes, HOA fees, whatever. Some of those items are negotiable. Some of the attorney's fees are negotiable. Some of the administrative fees are negotiable. So when a bank looks at an asset under FFIEC guidelines, under federal guidelines, they have to take the asset here, evaluate it, and then they actually write down a specific value. Every bank has a different formula. Some banks are 15%. I heard somebody say they took less. Some banks are 20%. It depends on how financially stable the bank is and what their credit tiers are. There's, you know, credit one is A+, credit two, credit three. So all of them have a ranking just like insurance companies. So they've already recognize that loss. So this, and I'm giving you this for strategy if you get into a war or a conversation about the cost of the house and you don't have other people that are vying for this particular property. Then you're able to negotiate because you have a payoff and you're able to talk to them and ask them, well, what about this fee? Can it be reduced? Well, what about this? Can it be? And all that's going to be to the betterment of your bottom line, and it's going to be the betterment for the customer as well, because that, remember, when you actually buy this house, it's going to hit their credit, and that amount could be significantly reduced for them. So there's some negotiation and some strategy to reduce the amount of your payoff once you get to the part where they have accepted you. You want to get to an accepted offer first. You want to lock that up. Then once you get locked up, then you want to negotiate, because you can always ask for less. All they're going to tell you is yes or no, because once you have them on the hook and you're 20 days in and you're getting ready to closed, they don't want to go back on the hook and start all over in that process with somebody else. I've been dealing with you already. I already know who you are. You talk to me on the phone. I'm trying to negotiate because I'm the loss mitigation strategist, right, the person. I want my bonus, too, for closing that sale. So if I lose your short sale as the loss mit person, then I have to start all over again. That might have been $100 for me. That might be $150 for me. So they do have incentive to negotiate with you all. Yes, sir. You first.
So the accepted offer is the property alone. Once that's accepted, there's still fees on top of that.
No, I'm saying the accepted offer from the bank. The bank already includes the fees. I'm looking at it holistically from the beginning. I don't care about your offer. What I care about is my balance. As a banker, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I'm trying to understand
what I'm saying.
Accept an offer and then try to bring it down.
Yeah. So you made an offer. The offer was $100,000, right? I think that that's an acceptable offer. I accept your offer is what I'm saying. To me, the bank, it is a total package offer. To you, it's because you think it's the value of the house. What I'm saying to you is if you have the payoff, the house, the total payoff is $100,000. I accepted your offer. Then all you're asking is to change the terms of your offer based on the items on the payoff if there's something to negotiate. Does that make sense? You already locked the deal up. This is not in the front end. You're negotiating in the back end now.
It seems like you wouldn't, if I've made an offer, you accept it. Why do you means as the bank?
I'm telling you that it happens every day. Right. And of course, the topic is called Insider Strategies of Bankruptcy. I've been doing I'm just telling you, I've been doing this thing behind the desk for a long time. This is the insider piece that you would never know unless you sat in a chair. Yeah, yeah. There is a reason. Because I'm the loss mitigation person. Okay? Now I'm the loss mitigation person. The person we're going to talk about next after this slide, right? If I have time, Lord Jesus. 9:30? Okay, whew, I've got to talk fast. I have 300, 400 files sitting on my desk. And that's 250 is industry standard. 250 files per agent is industry standard. 400 files is what they have on their desk. Okay? So, you made me an offer. I got my promise to pay. I'm looking at my pipeline. I get $100 per one that I close based on my delegated write-off authority, because we all have a write-off authority. The loss mitigation has supervisor, manager, VP, AVP, whoever they are. Right. I don't want to lose you, Mr. Customer. My payoff says that $9,000, $12,000 is fees. Dude, here's the fees. I'm marking them off. I feel I need my $100.
You telling the files, that makes me understand.
Okay. I need my money. Run me my dollars. I've been working hard. I talked to you 12 times. You told me you were going to close on the 30th. Please, let's go. Christmas is coming. I need my $100 to buy my kids' birthday presents or Christmas presents. You understand where I'm coming from?
That idea of so much negotiating fees, that's plugged in to when you're coming in with a full.
It is.
It's a discount, then there's no negotiation of fees.
Absolutely not. And what I'm telling you is that the short sale of tomorrow is a full sale. And it's really not going to be discounted unless you get in front of it and do the creative rap deal like this gentleman is saying. If you're negotiating with the bank, and I'm the bank, the gatekeeper, and I'm telling you guys, I'm Googleable. You can Google me, and it'll say, you can't get past Tiffany Ray. She is the person that blah, blah, blah. I need all of my dollars, because to me, I'm looking at the big picture for the bank. Right? If I know that value is worth, I will never take $75,000 for a $100,000 property, not in this market. It is not going to happen. Not on my watch. Somebody might, because they might be desperate. Their portfolio person might tell them, I'm doing a fire sale, and I need to get rid of 10 of these houses, and I'm willing to throw some dogs in with the good stuff, and I'm willing to take 75 cents on a dollar. That could happen, but it's not likely. Not right now.
That's why they're going to be working with agents.
That's right.
But
that's
I had a question.
Hold on. This gentleman.
So where do these loss mitigation specialists in Manhattan?
Oh, and that's the next slide. Yes.
Yeah. What is it? Yeah.
Oh, first place insurance. I'm sorry. First place insurance. I'm sorry. Banking jargon. For the bank, complete package. BPO area analysis. I think this lady right here asked about that. Now I'm going to put on my Vena hat. You really, really, really need to get good on evaluating properties. That was my Vena impersonation. Let me tell you why. Because that's what she says. It's really, really, and like five times, and that means she really wants for you to do it. And I really want for you to do it, too. The BPO is typically the, unless we can get inside of a property, the bank, can get inside of a property, because you always want interior appraisal, if you can get it, anytime you can, that's the best, right? But if the property is going through some type of foreclosure or something like that, we may not have authorization yet to get into the house. We're going to do a broker's price opinion, a BPO. That's pretty much what we're basing our value on right now. So we're blind. I'm sitting here in Cincinnati, and I'm looking at a property in North Carolina. I'm expecting my BPO company, valuation company, to come back with the best price so that I can have something to start my analysis with and work on. You are actually going to have area analysis because I'm a loss mitigation specialist. I've got 400 files. I'm not looking at any area analysis. We hired a company, but they better do their job because that's all I'm going on. I'm not an overachiever in that aspect. Like, that gets me no value, no money, no nothing for me to go over and above and get different information. You're going to be able to provide information, and that is part of what you want to put in your package for your offer. You're going to know already this is a distressed property. It's a 3-in-1. It was built in this. It's brick. It's going to take about X amount of dollars because you're going to look at the house and have some idea of what needs to be done in the house, right? So you don't underestimate the cost of repairs because repairs values are all over the place right now. And you're going to put that with the package, and it's going to show that you did some due diligence. Guys, this is really, really important because as a loss mitigation person, I would be looking at that if I got 3 or 4 or 5 offers in, and let's say everybody's offer was funding. I need to get funding for the house. I'm looking at how likely it is for that property to appraise once I get inside. That may make me choose your deal over somebody that offered me more money for that deal if the funding wasn't cash. Make sense? Okay. Funding. Proof of funds. Not worth the paper it's printed on. But we're bankers. We like a lot of useless paper. We want to see that. Cash is king. And no longer are the days of negotiation. Look, don't send me a 60% offer. I'm going to file 13. Do you know what that is? Trash. That's right. I'm not even looking at it. I'm not going to send you a declination. I'm not going to respond and send you a counteroffer. I have 400 files on my desk. That one is going to be marked on the account, and it's going in the bin. It's out of here. Don't do it. Don't think you're going to start at 60 and negotiate to 100 because 3 other people are going to offer me more, and I'm not going to even – I'm going to document on the file that you sent the offer. And that sucker's out of here. I'm not even putting it in. It's gone. I'm not even looking at it. So don't think you're going to play cat and mouse with bankers right now in this seller's market and this high market where houses are. It's not going to happen. Don't do it. You will be wasting your time. Try it if you think I'm not telling you the truth. For you, you want a point of contact and a decision maker. That's really important. Yes, ma'am. Question. Go ahead.
So in 2008 or 10, mm-hmm. short sales, they were giving sellers incentives.
That's right. Oh, that's not going to happen. What her question was 2008 through 10, 11, they were giving sellers incentive, reload funds. Those days are pretty much long gone. You're going to have some programs, Making Home Affordable was the big proponent of that. Relocation assistance, $2,500, $4,500 if you were going out of state, this, that, and the other. That unless our lovely administration, thank you, 15-minute guy, is doing something that's going to come up with something, because it's gonna get ugly. It is. All these people with evictions, oh, it's going to be a mess. They're going to have to come up with something. Because as a bank, I really have no incentive to pay you to leave.
Right. You haven't been paying for
2 years. I don't. Because it's a seller's market, you reverse it and it becomes a buyer's market, like the gentleman mentioned earlier, then I'm negotiating with you. I'm doing auction.com. I'm starting with $1,500 up to $3,500 right off the bat to get you out the house. $5,000 if you're in the West Coast market. I'm doing that. And the loss mitigation representative does have authorization up to a certain amount to negotiate those terms. For the most part, most of them do have some delegated authority. Please do not let them tell you that they don't. They really do. Yes, sir, all the way in the back. I don't know that that's approved. I know that it's on the block. His question was the 35-year mortgage. I know that it's on the block. Again, from a banker's perspective, yum yum, right? Ooh, 35. It's just like buying a car and financing it for 10 years. Like, that's like the greatest thing ever, right? 35-year mortgage, it's great. If you're 20, right? But for you, I think that that's going to be a thing, and I think the liar loans are coming back too. That's what I call them. You know, the one where your grandmother lives in your basement and includes $1,500 to your bottom line. Yeah, but no, I've not heard. Somebody asked me where the loss mitigation people hang out or how to get them. This is it. Well, of course you can call, email, fax. There's a thing called a SPOC, and I'm not talking about live long and prosper, like you people in here, that, right? I'm talking about a single point of contact. So what happened with the time of Making Home Affordable and the CFPB, where people were saying, I'm trying to call my mortgage company, I'm trying to call, and I can't get in touch with them. When your loan, and it differs from bank to bank, when your loan becomes between the 60-day of delinquency and the 120 days, you typically get assigned as the customer a single point of contact. This is a person that's separate and apart from the loss mitigation, bankruptcy, or foreclosure person. That single point of contact is, let me see, like your client care or patient care advocate. They, if your file gets, your short sale gets lost, they help you get it. If you have questions about what's going on in your loans, they're like customer service on steroids, but they're not customer service. So when you look up customer service, you're not going to see single point of contact, because these people's numbers aren't typically advertised, but they are assigned to the customer, and the customer will be able to tell you who their single point of contact is. This is not calling generic customer service and getting information. You want to ask for the single point of contact, because they could be an advocate for you to get in touch with the loss mitigation representative or bankruptcy person or supervisor or manager. Keep that in mind. LinkedIn, have you ever thought about looking at a loss mitigation person and tagging them on LinkedIn? Oh, guys, people love to talk about what they do. They do. And most of the people that are sitting in the chair, these kids, all they know is social media. Now, I'm not going to say go as far as Facebook or Messenger. I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I'm not going to sit here in public forum and tell you to do that. But LinkedIn is a professional place. Make friends. What bank do you want to deal with? U.S. Bank? You can search this. They are happy to put, I'm the loss mitigation supervisor for U.S. Bank. I'm the loss mitigation supervisor for, they're going to put their profile, how many files are in it. Get in touch with them. Start talking to them today. What are you waiting on? Conferences. How many of you have been to a mortgage servicing conference? Mortgage servicing conference. Mortgage bankers, I showed you that statistic earlier from mortgage bankers. 5-star, CBA, NATCC, bankers love to have conferences and drink. Listen to me. There's a million conferences that happen all the time. You can go, and guess who you're going to meet there? You're going to meet all the lenders, all all the U.S. Bank people and their supervisors, loss mitigation people, for the measly ticket of $7,500, wherever it is. You can go. You don't have to go attend the conference. You can shake hands and get our cards. Wonderful way to meet people. I have people approach me all the time. My biggest note investor, he actually met me at a conference. Followed me everywhere I went. He wasn't even a vendor at the conference. Became one of my good friends. We're still cool. We go to the game today. So, and he bought like all of my defaulted notes and made my group look great. Call the foreclosure bankruptcy attorney trustee. We talked about that earlier. Call the note holder. We talked about that earlier for those bank servicer people. We talked about that. Questions on this page? I got 15 minutes. We're almost to the end. Huh. Yeah, I forgot about this one. This one. Okay, like, if you're trying not to win friends and influence allies, this is how you do it. It is. I'm just trying to tell you. But the squeaky wheel gets the oil. Listen to me. Banks have a big thing having to do with reputational risk and how the customer perceives the bank. Nobody wants to get complaints. Nobody wants to be in the newspaper. No bank likes negative press. This is a major no-no in our industry. You want to get under somebody's skin and get an answer right now? Write your senator. Write the executive complaints department. Oh, the executive complaints department, that is the CEO, CFO, COO of the department. Andrew Ciceri, Greg Carmichael, those people. I've been trying to speak with this person for, I have an offer in full for this house. It's been sitting on your books for 4 months. You could have already sold this and it'd been, you don't think that that's going to get some attention? Of course it will, because when the CFPB came in, we have a responsibility to acknowledge a complaint within 7 days. Not resolve, but acknowledge. They're going to even acknowledge the fact that, and that's from anybody, whether it comes from the OCC, Office of Comptroller of Currency, which is what governs most federal banks, not the national ones. That's why I say regulatory agency. Some of them are FIDC. Some of them are thrift if they're a savings and loan. But senators, any complaint, and now big banks have complaint departments. So I gave you the loss mitigation person, I gave you the single point of contact, and now I'm giving you not customer service, now I'm giving you the complaints department. Separate and apart from any of those, you write a letter, an email, a phone call, they are bound by CFPB to acknowledge within 7 days. Oh, you can throw CFPB up there too. They don't have any teeth right now because Cordray, but it's still a thing, and they still can come in and do audits. Like I said, there's not a lot of bite, but nobody wants to be frowned upon. Banks are scared of that negative press, and you guys can use that to your advantage. Last ditch effort, that's why it's on this page. Questions about that? Oh, I do it all the time, and I write a letter, and you just write one letter, and you send it to everybody. It's the same letter. And then that's when I use my married name, Tiffany Smith, instead of Ray, because I'm known in the industry as Tiffany Ray. It's just Smith. Yes, ma'am.
So I'm in the healthcare industry. When a client in the nursing home has an issue, the ombudsman and the
That's right.
What this is.
That's exactly what this is. So she says she's in the healthcare industry. This would be similar to the ombudsman or the patient advocate for healthcare. That is absolutely right. That is exactly what this is. You made the correlation. And I think next is, and what you should be doing now. I think I made it. Would I have like 2 minutes? If you decide to do short sales, make a decision. Pre-foreclosures, are those right for you? If doing the short sale is actually right for you, what paperwork will you need to complete your package? What does that look like? Guys, don't be getting ready. Be ready already. This is coming. I just showed you that. What strategy will you use to find the deals? Gave you a whole list of those too. Build up your cash reserves. Cash is king. Doesn't have to be your cash. I talked about it earlier, and I'm talking about it again. Pete's doing the thing. I think it was a swap meet last night. It showed you how people have money and how stuff circulates. Doesn't have to be your cash, but it should be cash because that's going to always be our financing. I will take less money in a cash offer then I would take in a deal that has to close because you're waiting on financing any day at a bank, because I know I can close by end of the month. I would sign off of that as a VP, and I would make sure that my people underneath me eat and get their bonus. Please keep that in mind. And build your relationships now, the LinkedIn, the notes. You can send them a note. If you pick a person that you know is the supervisor, nothing wrong with a note. Hi, I just want to let you know my name is Tiffany, and I buy houses. Hope to be talking to you soon. When you guys have something on the book, have a nice day. It's a note. People still like mail. I do. So I think I'm at time, and I think that's it. Questions? Yes, sir. Thank you. Can he ask his question? Do we have time for that? Okay.
How many people in a bank, say like this, are there that work in the whatever the department is called?
Loss mitigation? So you have default, which is pre-foreclosure, and you have loss mitigation, and I think I have 249 folk. Well, you have to understand, U.S. Bank is pretty big, and they do servicer stuff as well, and it spans five. So it depends, and that's going to vary by person. You want your file count down, but right now it is not, and because they're help wanted signs. Yes, because you have to have a front-end processor for your deal. It's not just a loss mitigation person. The department is comprised of several different stages, like a prospector and then a closer and then a, yeah. Yes, sir.
It has to go to the probate. Only the family members are not interested in the house. Does the probate still assign it an executor?
Sometimes it does, and so he asked a probate question, and sometimes it does, but when the person dies, you want to get in front of that probate thing as soon as possible, because you're still going to have to get some permission if an executor is assigned, and then you're still going to have the family members that are actually on the note and mortgage to sign off on that deal, because some people think that they have interest, and that's a whole rabbit's hole. But yes, they could. They can pretty much do what they want to, which is why you want to try to keep stuff out of probate.
If it's coming, we just want to walk away from the house, get it built, that's worth it, like a hoarder house.
Mm-hmm. And that would be, and you would have catch it before they do the deed. You would have catch it before the deed. Yes, your family member is the person you want to be speaking to. Yes, sir. Anything else? Yes, sir. Last question before they put me out. Yes, sir. Here, let me walk back because you're talking really low. Yes, sir.
You're writing a purchase offer, and then you're asking for the full payoff.
Yes.
Second. So you've got an offer. So you've already
put you have the payoff before your offer. Because you're working with the customer, the seller. And when I said you get the power of attorney, you're asking them to get the payoff for you. You don't want to have to bother with that later. That's something they could call and request, and they'll have it emailed to you typically with I'm saying negotiate after the offer is accepted. But you want your payoff up front. You need to know what you're dealing with. Get your payoff. When you get all those credentials from the seller, get your payoff. Okay. Up front. Right. Yes, sir.
I just think you lost your opportunity.
Yeah, no. You haven't.
Okay.
You haven't.
Okay.
Is that it? Thank you guys for coming. I appreciate you. Hope you think it was valuable. Yes. Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. Did I do it again? Thank you. Okay. Love you.
Which bank do you work for?
Right now I'm at Fifth Third. I've been at Fifth Third for a minute. I was at U.S. Bank. I was at Shell Point. I was at Citi.
Hold on. I mean, there's some people, but mm-hmm. I have more detailed questions.
Okay. Ma'am?
I'm a realtor.
You're going to ask me a long question. I'm like my long question. No,
period. Okay. So when someone has been discharged from bankruptcy, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, when they were doing the incentives for the seller, I could still reach out to them for them to sell for me to do the short sale. But how can I market to them to do that now if they're not doing no incentives after they were discharged with the bankruptcy? But if they wouldn't have any incentive to do it because they, I don't know, I'll probably.
because most bankruptcy attorneys file the bankruptcy so they're relieved of the debt, but the debt, but they don't release the note off of it. So they do have it. You have a bargaining chip. Most people just don't know it. You just.
Okay. I'll talk to you later.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. We would love to have you come speak in Toledo.
Okay.
Okay. Is that possible?
Well, sure.
I'm taking a Toledo Real Estate Center.
Yes, ma'am.
And we meet the second Tuesday of every month.
Okay.
We'll let you wait for it to get warm, like May and June.
I don't worry. I have family in Detroit, and I'll pass that way. I'll
get
you
out of class.
Yes, ma'am, I will. I will get in touch with you. I will get in touch with you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Are you the law person? You just stick with me. I'm going to answer your question.
Okay. Ma'am, we get that.
Oh, Jesus. What?
Bank of America, I just came to hear you talk. You kicked ass.
Thank you.
Well,
today you're not from B of A.
No.
Today you're a real estate investor.
No, I'm my partner.
You're a real estate investor.
I'm a real estate investor.
Okay.
But I don't. I'm sitting behind a desk too.
No, I know. I'm too. Okay. Thank you. You are not a real. Okay. What's happening here stays in here. Yeah. Okay. I should have asked that damn question.
I should have asked that
question. Right. When did you like to
say that? Yeah, here.
When was that city?
Oh, Jesus.
95 to 96.
So I was in Mario.
So you were there when you moved? I was in your five to be in the city.
I'm like,
I know, right?
Like, put on your clothes.
Why private?